Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 227 of the world's most dangerous podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. Joining me this week, your friend and mine, the guru behind the amazing site known as RedsMinorLeagues.com, Doug Gray. How are you today, Doug?
I'm pretty good. It's National Pepperoni Pizza Day. I just had half of a pepperoni pizza. The Reds could lose 9 million to nothing tonight, and I wouldn't even be that upset. It's been a good day.
they really might lose 9 million to nothing, but let me just say this. I'm a little disappointed in you, Doug Gray.
I'll accept that, but let's actually find out why.
Only half of the pepperoni pizza?
Yeah, only half of the pepperoni pizza. I got to save a little bit for later, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. That way you get to enjoy the pepperoni pizza more than once.
Yes.
All right, you win this round. You want to talk about the Reds, Cincinnati Reds?
We can. There's a lot of things to talk about, or maybe not. I guess it kind of depends on the mood that you're in, doesn't it?
Well, I'm trying really hard to be in a good mood this week. And my piece over at Cincinnati Magazine this week was ways to be positive or optimistic about the way the Reds are finishing the season and going into the offseason. And, you know, we can talk about that some if you want. But I do want to talk about your bailiwick, which is the minor leagues. And I think it's a little more, let's put it this way. I think it's a little easier to be optimistic about the Cincinnati Reds if we're talking about the minor leagues. Because it's really not a bad year for the minor league system, right?
You know, I actually am going to disagree with you a little bit on that one.
Oh, excellent. Conflict already. I love it.
I mean, if you really want to look at it, I mean, Nick Senzel is the top prospect, and he missed the second half of the season with an injury.
Moment. Who's this? I haven't heard of this guy.
Nick Senzel. He's pretty good at baseball, but, you know, the Reds have no idea where they're going to play him, and, you know, he's just been injured, and I don't really know how to qualify his vertigo issue, but it is a health issue that he's dealt with twice in the last year.
I don't know that guy. I've never heard of him. Well, I don't follow the minor leagues like you do, though.
Well, okay. but you know, you got Hunter Green right behind him as the next guy, kind of is the big prospect, and you know, we're not sure if he's going to need Tommy John surgery or not, and we're not going to find out until March-ish. Taylor Trammell he's the next guy in line. I mean, he had a good season, but I realistically, like, there were only two or three guys that kind of really had that top prospect feel to them that actually performed well this year. And, you know, two of those guys got hurt and missed half of the season.
I'm trying to be optimistic, and you're just smacking me around, Doug.
I'm sorry, Chad. I really am. I don't want to lie to the listeners out there. I feel that it's not my duty to just kind of shine things up for them.
Absolutely. And if that were our duty, we would have failed at it this year because there's no way to put a shine on this. Okay. What about this, though? The Reds minor league system continues to be fairly highly ranked. Is that true or not true?
That is true. There's been a few reputable places that have come out with their farm system rankings, organizational rankings, whatever you want to call them, you know, in the past couple of weeks. And the Reds have been in the top 10 in both. I think one of them had them sixth, one of them had them eighth.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Okay.
But I mean, if you're going to ask me, I don't think that they're wrong. But when I look at what the Reds need, that's a problem because the farm system doesn't really have that plethora of starting pitching that it seems that they need right now.
Yeah, you're telling me. Okay, so I do want to talk about the minor league system, but I want to frame it as how can this minor league system help the Reds in 2019, whether by trade or who's going to be coming up. But before we really sort of dig into the assets that the Reds have, I do want to talk about those top two prospects. Because you're right, it's not at all the way any of us hoped the year would go for Nick Senzel, the number one prospect, and Hunter Green, the big stud number two overall pick in the draft. I guess there's only the only way to classify the season for those two guys, who are, I think, far and away the two biggest prospects. That, and most people will agree with that. But there's no other way to describe their season other than it's a disappointment. And not necessarily because of what happened on the field. Matter of fact, certainly not because of what's happened on the field. Because of injuries, right?
Yeah, when both guys were on the field, they performed very well. But, you know, Hunter Green, you don't know what's going to happen with the injury. And Nick Senzel missed the second half of the season. And, I mean, he's back on the field now out in the Instructional League. That's very good to hear. But at the same time, had that injury not occurred, he'd be playing in Cincinnati right now. Now, where, who knows? But he would absolutely be playing right now in a Cincinnati Red uniform.
Yeah, no doubt. Stick a pin in Senzel for a moment, because I want to talk about the fact that he's playing outfield in the Instructional League. But about Hunter Green, how concerned are you about this injury? The Reds are going to hope, they're hoping not to have to commit to surgery, right? Tommy John surgery.
Yes. Their plan of action right now is to just kind of do rehab, you know, in different injections. I don't know which specific ones he is going to get. There's various different ones the guys can get, kind of depending on what route they want to go. They're hoping that it turns out like a Michael Lorenzen situation or an Anthony DeSclafani situation where they both tore their UCL, but mm-hmm. the tear wasn't enough to necessarily need to go in there and just replace the whole thing.
Right, they were able to come back.
Yes, and so that's kind of what the Reds are hoping for right now with Hunter Green, that, you know, these injections in the rehab will repair it enough that it won't be necessarily an issue in the short term, and you never know long term, because they could replace it and he could tear it again down the road. That's happened to plenty of pitchers.
Sure.
It's just, you know, one of the risks that comes along with throwing a fastball for a living.
His ball is really fast.
It is. It is literally a fastball, Chad.
Yes, it is. It's like 1,000 miles an hour or something.
You may be slightly off on that, but it sounds really close.
Hey, listen, man. I don't know about your stat cast and all your fancy metrics. I'm just, the eye test says it's 1,000 miles an hour.
I'll accept the eye test.
Okay. So Hunter Green, and I guess we really need to discuss it. How much blame do I get for the fact that he hurt his arm?
If you're asking for my actual opinion, I'm going to go with zero. Oh, if you're asking for my internet opinion, like 98%.
For those of you that don't remember, before the season, I was talking about why I thought on Twitter, and nobody ever, you just need to stay away from Twitter. It's never any good for anybody. But I was talking about why I would consider trading Hunter Green. I didn't say they should trade him. He's a great prospect, but he had a lot of value. And the reason I said they thought they should maybe consider at least dealing him in a trade for Christian Yelich or someone like that, is that pitchers get hurt. There's no such thing as a pitching prospect. And, of course, that got construed by Hunter Green, among others, as me hoping that he gets hurt. And that's literally the last thing that I want to happen. I don't know Hunter Green other than our not-so-pleasant interactions on Twitter. And that's twitter.com. It's a website for those of you that don't know. But I really didn't want him to get hurt. And I have been sort of fingers crossed all year that he'd be healthy all season to get me off the hook. And now the words Tommy John are coming up. And you can understand why I'm feeling a little bit attacked at this moment.
Yeah, but as you said, you should just stay off of Twitter.
That solves a lot of problems, yes.
Lesson learned, huh?
That's right. I've not learned it yet, but I'm trying. back to Nick Senzel. He's a good baseball player.
He is. I will back up that statement with full confidence.
No, see, I'm really a scout.
If you're telling me that Nick Senzel's a good baseball player and you're a scout, I believe that you're a good scout now.
There you go. Yeah, that's an easy call. Senzel, I've been complaining all year. I thought he should have been with the Reds way before he got injured for the season. And we don't need to relitigate that question, because I think it's pretty clear the Reds were soft-pedaling a little bit with Senzel. And I guess I get it, but I wanted to see him here. But here's my question. He's out there playing outfield in the Instructional League, and specifically left field to start. What are your thoughts on the Reds' decision to have him play in the outfield out there and what it means for the 2019 Reds?
It's a weird question, because not that the question itself is weird. The whole situation is just weird to me.
Right.
If you can provide value on the dirt, you should stay in the dirt unless you can also play center field. Because center field is such a valuable position that if you can play there, then it makes sense. But the Reds are saying that Nick Senzel is going to start off in left field, where the Reds already have a guy who plays left field, who's locked up for at least 5 more years, maybe 6, I'm not entirely sure.
What's that guy's name, and is he good at baseball?
Jesse Winker seems to be very good, at least at hitting the baseball. I don't think that he's as bad defensively as the numbers suggest he is. But I don't also believe that he's a good defender. But
he's a legitimate starter at a corner outfield spot.
Absolutely. And he's cheap and he's under control. So
he gets on base too, right?
He really does.
Oh, I love it.
And then, you know, you look over in right field, you've got Scott Schebler, who another above average hitter who's under team control for several more years. He's still in arbitration years. Like, he's not even starting to get sort of expensive.
And another guy, when he's on the field, he produces. So I mean, he's a legit above average contributor.
Yeah, and so the idea that they're playing him in the corners now, I've said it before. I don't have a problem with him getting experience in the corners. I do think that it's different than playing center field, and I would prefer to have a guy out there who, if you do have to push him to left field or right field for whatever reason, that they have a little bit of experience there, because reading the ball is different.
Yeah.
But they've said, or in the statement that they put out, was they believe he's athletic enough to play center field. Well, who plays center field for the Reds right now? And I know this is going to hurt your feelings.
Here we go.
Yeah. Is Billy Hamilton.
Comic book and, superhero Billy Hamilton.
And Billy Hamilton is, I mean, he is incredible defensively. Right. He's good on, he's really good on the bases, but he's not what he used to be. He's just not.
You're trying to soften this for me. I appreciate that.
Unfortunately, he doesn't steal as many bases or even attempt to steal as many bases as he used to, which I don't understand. I know he's probably not as fast as he was 3-4 years ago, but he's still one of the fastest players in baseball. He should have more than 30 steals this year.
Absolutely.
But he's also the worst hitter in baseball that plays every day. And Nick Senzel, unless every person on the planet is wrong, Nick Senzel is going to out-hit him by a whole lot. If your organization truly believes that Nick Senzel is athletic enough to play center field, he needs to be spending 90% of his time in instructional league and possibly fall ball playing center field rather than 90% of his time working on other positions. It just does. It doesn't. The logic does not add up for kind of the plan that they're going about, assuming that they're not just blowing smoke up our butts or Nick's butt or whoever about him being athletic enough to play center field.
Now,
and if that's the case, why would you even bring up center field? I really doubt that Bobby Nightingale, who was the one who kind of broke this whole story that, you know, the Reds were going to be playing him in the outfield and got statements from the Reds. I doubt he was out there just, you know, hounding them about center field.
Right.
So the fact that they kind of tossed that in there kind of as an afterthought to, you know, left field, right field, it was just weird to me.
It really was sort of strange. And I guess if we take them at their word that Dick Williams in the front office believes that Nick Senzel can play center field on a daily basis, it kind of reminds me of the reaction. I think you and I may have talked about it before the season. I know I talked about it with Jason Linden when the discussion was made about Nick Senzel potentially playing shortstop. And to me, that was like a game changer. If he could play shortstop, it just completely changed the way we looked at this, the rebuilding process and about the way the offense was going to look going forward. And I have the same opinion when you start talking about center field. If he can play center field, all of a sudden you have above average hitters, at least average hitters, just about everywhere on offense. And that completely changes everything when it comes to that side. We still got to worry about the pitching, but that's a huge thing. And they've made the case that, well, it's harder to learn the corner outfield spots because of the way the ball tails away from you. And okay, I can buy that. But if there's some chance he can play center field, they need to get him ready to play center field in 2019 because that's a spot that could be open. As much as I love Billy Hamilton and everyone knows he's my favorite player, that's the spot on the field that's easiest to slot someone into. And so, I'm with you. If he can play it, man, let's get him playing it out there. Let's see if he can do it because, man, that's huge. It's completely huge.
Yeah. Now let's kind of get back to that whole learning left field is more difficult. And again, as I said, I believe that is the case. But this is also the same organization in front office that tossed Dilson Herrera and Scooter Gennett out there with a combined one inning of outfield experience at the major league level, mind you.
Dilson Herrera didn't even own an outfielder's glove. He was borrowing Brandon Dixon's glove, which we're talking about a billion-dollar corporation. They couldn't get the guy a glove, but anyway.
Yeah, it's just so weird that this is kind of how they're going about arguably one of their most valuable assets in the entire organization.
And it goes back to the old question that we've had all season long, which is they really didn't have a plan for Nick Senzel, in my opinion. They're playing it by ear, and it's just very frustrating.
And, you know, I'm not entirely in agreement with that, Chad. I definitely believe that it could be the case, but it always comes back to me that maybe the Reds had a plan, and maybe that plan was to trade Scooter Gennett, and the guy that gets to make the final call said, we're not trading Scooter Gennett.
Okay, that's absolutely reasonable, yes.
And that kind of gets in the way of what the baseball people actually wanted to do.
Yeah.
And
good point.
Yeah. So I don't know. I can see it both ways. I really can, because, you know, we can all kind of sit here and agree that even some of the moves that the baseball people seem to have been making at times were ones that left us scratching our head and wondering, what's the plan here, because it didn't make sense. So
yeah, no, absolutely. That absolutely fits into that narrative. Let me one more point on Nick Senzel, which is this. A lot of people have been like, and I agree with the way you started out your comments on Nick Senzel, which is if this guy can play on the dirt, if he can play infield, it just doesn't make any sense not to play him on the infield, especially when you consider that Scooter Gennett, for example, who is had a fantastic two fantastic seasons. I love Scooter Gennett. He's not good defensively. I love having his bat in the lineup, but he's not good defensively. So it does make sense that if Nick Senzel can play adequately on the infield, you need to play him there. Now, he's not just adequate. I think this year he was the best, named the best defensive second baseman in the International League, I believe, and then last year the best defensive third baseman, if I'm not mistaken.
You are not. He's a very good defender on the dirt.
So I agree that it makes sense to have him on the dirt. But let me just say this. If Nick Senzel plays outfield this year, it doesn't mean he's not the long-term second baseman. I think that's what people are kind of forgetting with all the feedback I'm getting on Twitter. And again, don't go on Twitter. It's the worst. But if he ends up playing outfield next year, or ends up playing some outfield, some infield, all around the diamond, you know, they try to get him five starts a week at different positions, it doesn't mean he's not the long-term answer at second base. So I wouldn't condemn the Reds this year, because I can see why you may want to keep Scooter at second base for this year, or at least through the trade deadline. Does that make sense? Do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, and I don't think that you're wrong. I think that when people go onto the second worst website in the world, Twitter.com, Facebook's the worst, by the way.
I thought RedLegNation.com was the worst.
You're confusing the word worst and best.
Oh, that's right. No, second best, but that's right.
Yes. But I think that when people have that reaction on Twitter, that it's probably more along the lines of what I'm also thinking here, in that the Reds are going to sign Scooter Gennett long term. It's just the Bob Castellini thing. It just, you know, with all of the rumors and the speculation that you've gotten from national writers about Bob Castellini and what he wants to do with this team, I think that they get the feeling that Scooter Gennett's going to get, you know, a 3 or 4 year extension on his on his contract with the Reds, and that means that Nick Senzel's going to wind up playing somewhere else. And
maybe,
you know, yeah, I don't know. I'd be lying if I said I didn't get that feeling, because I did. I still have that feeling.
And you can make an argument for signing Scooter for 3 or 4 years. I mean, you can make an argument for that. I don't hate having Scooter Gennett's bat in this lineup. I don't, but I don't know. It makes it difficult for me to understand why they would. Well, no, it's easy to understand. If they go that way, I've got to think it's Bob Castellini stepping in, because that's the feedback we've gotten, is that Scooter and Castellini, they've been talking. And oh my goodness. Who has more walks this year, Scooter Gennett or Billy Hamilton?
I honestly don't know that answer.
Billy Hamilton is the answer to that, even though he has almost 100 fewer plate appearances.
Yeah.
Let's not criticize Scooter. Scooter's had a really good season.
Scooter can hit, though. That's the difference. Kind of makes up a little bit of that I don't walk as much aspect of things.
Absolutely. He squares the ball up much, much more. I don't hate having Scooter in this lineup. And if truth of the matter is, if Senzel's playing center field, I'm kind of okay with it. If since they're trying to slot Senzel all around the diamond, I'd rather him be slotting Scooter Gennett at second base and third base and left field and right field, frankly.
I agree completely because he's just not as good of a fielder. Like the overall value of just sliding Nick Senzel in at second base would be, assuming that Nick Senzel is what everybody believes he's going to be, would be greater in that role than him being in a guy who just roams around and gets four starts a week.
His upside certainly is as an elite fielder, and we already know he can hit. I mean, am I wrong? I mean, that's what seems to be the all the prospect guys are saying, and you're a prospect guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that, I mean, he's not that Scooter Gennett can't claim that, you know, he's, you know, an all-star or anything, but Nick Senzel looks like a guy who is going to be a perennial all-star.
Yeah. Okay, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. Let's move on to the rest of the minor league system. In a moment, I want to ask you about your minor league awards. But first, 2019, I've gone on record. I've been very vocal in saying the Reds really need to go all in this winter. And a lot of people interpret that as they need to go sign the best free agent pitchers they can find. And I don't necessarily mean that. Although I do think they need to be in on the mix on a lot of free agent pitchers, whoever makes sense for the Reds. But it also means on the trade market. And what I'm going to ask you, let's leave Senzel and Green out of the mix. Who are the most valuable trade assets in the Reds minor league system if they were to make some trades? I imagine Taylor Trammell is number one on that list. But who do you think, and since you follow these guys a lot more closely than anyone on earth, who are the most valuable trade assets in the Reds minor league system? And maybe tell me why you think that.
Well, I would say Trammell's the top guy.
He's good.
That's why his trade value would be so high. He's good.
And he's like 14 years old.
Oh, he's a little bit older than that. Oh. I feel like the Reds will be breaking some labor laws with that one. But I don't. You're the judge. I don't know. You tell me. you tell me.
Okay, so he's like 18. How old is he? Yes.
He is 20. He turned 21.
Just turned 21.
A couple weeks ago. So he'll be 21 all of next baseball season, yes, pretty much. But you know, I mean, he does everything well except for throw the baseball. I mean, he's got a below average arm. Now, you know, it's not Johnny Damon noodle arm, can barely make it from, you know, where you're standing in center field to the cutoff man. It's not that bad, but it's definitely something that, you know, you'll notice by comparison to, say, I mean, definitely Billy Hamilton, who's got an outstanding arm in center field. But even just your average center fielder, Trammell's arm is below average. But, I mean, the guy can hit, he can run, and, I mean, people just think that he's going to get better at the plate than he is right now, and he's already pretty good. I think the next guy would probably be either Tony Santion or Jonathan India, depending on which way you wanted to kind of lean with that. I would personally go with Santion, but I think that I'm in the minority on that one.
India, of course, yeah, the number one pick this year, the number five overall, right?
Yes, and you know, rules have changed in the last couple of years. Once the season is over, you're now allowed to trade draft picks from the previous year, whereas it used to be you had to wait a full year to trade these guys. So now, once the offseason gets here, in theory, if the Reds wanted to trade Jonathan India, they could now. And I think that after those three guys, you're taking a pretty big jump down to the next guy that would bring significant value.
Let's talk about Santion for just a moment. And if he's not part of a package where the Reds bring something back, my contention is that Santion needs to be in the mix for like the number five starter in Cincinnati next year. From opening day. How crazy am I when I say that?
Well, I think you're a little bit crazy when you say that, only because this is Cincinnati, and they're not going to start that clock when they could just wait a couple weeks. You know, if
this is me sounding disgusted, Doug.
I get where you're coming from, and I'm with you, but the Reds are going to do what's best for the Reds, and I just can't see them thinking that, you know, 2 weeks in early April would be worth starting the clock for. If this team were looking at, you know, 95 wins next year, maybe that's a different story. While I would love for you to be correct, I just don't think that that's a realistic expectation. So
they're going to play 162 games next year, and somebody's going to win all those games. So they're looking at least 162 wins.
I mean, they're going to see 162 wins.
See, that's all I'm saying.
Now, how many of those wins they get is a very different story.
That's true.
But
okay, yeah, so but after 2 weeks, like the fifth starter, after they go a couple rounds and there's some off days, is he good enough? Is he talented enough?
He's absolutely talented enough
from the beginning.
I mean, in the entire organization, as far as starting pitcher goes, when you want to talk about pure stuff, I mean, he's only behind Luis Castillo and Hunter Green, and he's not that far behind.
But Rozelle. Rozelle Iglesias.
Well, I don't think he's a starting pitcher.
Oh,
so
starters, okay. Sorry, man.
I thought you were just implying that you think he should still be starting, because I know that's a hot take that a lot of people have, too.
But I wish. But it's in terms of pure stuff in the organization, I would put him with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say Rysel's probably a little bit of ahead of that. But at the same time, how would his stuff look if he had to go out and throw six innings every 5 days? Yeah. Might be a little bit different. We don't really know.
Definitely.
But, you know, Santillan's a guy, I mean, he throws 95, 96. He'll touch 100. Good changeup that'll throw it 88 to 90 miles an hour. Really good slider that'll throw it 88 to 91 miles an hour. I mean, this year was the big thing. He started throwing strikes consistently. You know, you started to see some of it last year when he was in Dayton. He'd go through long stretches of having control, but then he'd have that hiccup or two, somewhere. And so his overall walk rate wasn't great last year, but you saw the beginnings of him putting that together. This year, it just all showed up.
Yeah.
And the walk rate pretty much just it disappeared. It went from below average to almost elite at the minor league level this year.
Let me put it to you this way, because I'm trying to relate all this to the way the minor league or the major league roster is going to look next year. I've been of the opinion the Reds need to go get at least a couple of starters. I mean, you're going to need more than five guys, but if you sign or trade for two guys, and then you've got Luis Castillo, you got Anthony DeSclafani, who I'm 100% positive will be healthy, because I'm insane, and Tyler Mahle. I think those are three guys that I'm comfortable with from day one, as the other three guys in that rotation, again, given health. Santillan's right in that mix, though. He's not the next level down, is he, with the guys like Cody Reed and Robert Stevenson and, you know, whoever else, Jose Lopez. He's more in that for next year only with Tyler Mahle up there. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
A little bit. But
is he a step behind those guys still?
I think he's probably a step behind in the organization's eyes just because he's got time, whereas guys like Cody Reed, Sal Romano, you know, even if they want to think about Michael Lorenzen next year,
right,
like they don't have as much time to make a decision on those guys.
I don't have more time. I'm tired of waiting. I don't have time for this.
Chad, I wish that I could make a counter argument to what you're saying, and I can't do it because I'm with you. I think that, I mean, just from a business perspective, that the Reds need to be very, very different next year. They need to win 80-something games next year. I think that it's very important for them to not use next year as another let's see what we've got kind of year.
Yeah, things fall off the cliff if they do that.
They need to be decisive. They need to win. They need to do everything they can to win. And that means playing your best 25 guys.
Yes.
That doesn't mean, you know, experimenting and seeing what you've got with 17 different starting pitchers.
Yeah, they've been doing that for a long time now. I think from a business standpoint, they have to. Certainly, and I'm interested to see if they do, because if they don't, I'm going to be really upset. I'm going to like say lots of mean things on the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast.
I will also probably say those things when you have me on, because,
there you go.
I hate to say this, I'm not getting any younger, Chad, and I'm not even old by old terms.
Yeah.
I'll be 35 next year, but I've...
Say
I want to see some winning. I really do.
Go ahead and say it. You're wanting to tell everybody that you're younger than me. Just say it.
I mean, I am younger than you, Chad.
Screw you.
Not by a whole lot.
Screw you, Doug Gray. All right, anyway. Okay, there's one other guy. Of all these pitchers we've mentioned, and we've mentioned just about all of them, it seems to me like there's one other guy that should be in that mix for, you know, like I said, with Mahle, and I think Santillan could be in that mix. Do you see any other guys? I'm going to tell you who I think in a moment. I want to see if you pick the same guy.
Are we only talking about minor league guys right now?
No, or
are we talking
minor about or majors, including guys on the current roster.
I would like to see what they have with Lucas Sims.
Lucas Sims, yeah. It's not who I was thinking about, but yeah, that's a...
Okay.
He's an interesting-looking guy. Can he throw enough strikes?
And that's the thing, is when he was with Atlanta this year, even in the minor leagues, he wasn't. But when he came over to the Reds, we're talking small sample size here. It was only a month. But, man, he pounded the strike zone on Louisville.
And you wonder if that's from that being an emphasis with the Reds or something. You don't know, or maybe it's just a small sample size.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're going to make the argument that, you know, he switched organizations, he stayed in the same league. Like, the Braves AAA League and the Reds AAA League, it's the same league. So it's not like these hitters hadn't seen him before and they just weren't sure what was coming or what to – because you can see that kind of thing happen sometimes. It wasn't like his first time through that league. He had been in that league all year. All of these opponents had seen him. Even if some of the players hadn't, right. Their teammates had. They knew what to expect.
His stuff looked good, though, didn't it?
And it did. And, you know, the stuff has never really been the issue. He's kind of always – I when they traded for him, I kind of compared him to being – or basically said he was the Braves version of Robert Stevenson.
Yeah.
He's the guy that had that stuff, he could never find that consistency, particularly with the strike zone.
That's a good call. That's not one that I was thinking of. The other guy I was thinking of that sort of I would think should be in that mix for possibly a starter beginning next season, you know, if not one of the top five in that next cut below. You may know who I'm talking about. His name is Luis Alberto Bonilla.
I don't know. I think his rights are going to be tough to acquire.
Come on.
He's a very highly sought-after pitcher.
Now you're talking. He's my favorite pitcher. I had to get that in. Sorry, Doug.
Well, you do what you want. This is your show.
Hey, listen, man. The fans demand it.
Hey, well, give them what they want.
Give them what they want. That's right. What about who hit the most home runs in the Reds minor league system this year?
That would be Ibandel Isabel. And ooh. I can't say it like you. So if you want to give the people what they want, you go for it.
Ibandel Isabel.
Yeah, see, you say it way better than I do.
Cannot wait till he plays for the Reds. Getting off track, but man, he had a great year, right?
He really did.
Good acquisition.
Between all of his time in the minor leagues this year, he hit 37 home runs.
That's a lot of home runs.
He hit one with the Dodgers before he came over in a late April trade. He hit 35 in the regular season for Daytona, which set a Florida State League record for most home runs in a season. And then he hit one in the playoffs for them.
People really hammer the Reds front office, and there are reasons. There have been some curious decisions lately, but there's also been a lot of really good ones. I mean, we talk about Castillo and DeSclafani. They basically stole them. Eugenio Suarez, they stole him and signed him to a team-friendly contract. But what about flipping Dylan Floro for a guy that has a chance? That's all you can ask, right?
Yeah, but that wasn't the right Dodgers trade.
Oh, which trade was it? Who did they get for Dylan Floro? Was that Hendrick? No, that was for Tony Cingrani.
Yeah, no, that's a third Reds Dodgers trade. The Reds got Isabel in the Ariel Hernandez transaction.
Oh, right. Well, there you go. Same difference. Although I thought that guy had a ton of talent, but they flipped him for a guy that has a chance.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he's gonna have to cut down on the strikeouts a little bit, but my goodness, like I don't think he's probably never gonna be an everyday player. I think there's just too much swing and miss there, but if you can get him to just make just enough contact where he could be such a threat off of the bench with that kind of power. I mean, anytime he makes contact, there's a chance. One of my favorite things that I do all year long is I track the distances of the home runs hit by the minor league guys. And he was the only guy in the system that hit more than 18 home runs total. He hit 20 home runs over 400 feet.
That's a lot.
Like, no one else hit that many home runs all season. Like, he's a different kind of dude.
Who'd they get for Dylan Floro?
I bet the internet will tell us.
Oh, man. I don't know. See, this is why I'm not the proprietor of RedsMinorLeagues.com, because...
Because you don't know how to use the internet look up information?
Well, no, I don't, really. I yell at my computer, hey, Google, tell me this, and it never answers. Okay, so anyway... we talked about him only so I could say his name. Again, give the people what they want. So Taylor Trammell, Tony Santillan, and then there's a pretty substantial drop to the next in terms of trade value. India. We didn't talk about Jonathan India.
Yes.
He's pretty good. I mean, he didn't really show it this year in the short amount of time he was in the system. But that guy got a chance to be sort of Senzel in a lot of ways, right? He's a different type of player. SEC third baseman, and it seems picked high in the in the draft, and it sounds like they're the same guy, but they're different types of players.
Yeah, I just think that this is nothing against Jonathan Nitti. I think he's a quality prospect. He's a top 75 prospect in all of baseball. I just think Nick Senzel's a different kind of guy.
Well, it's kind of like, Sparky Anderson, you know, he used to be the manager of the Reds, George Sparky Anderson.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, good chapter on Sparky in a book that's out about the Reds now called The Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds, available to all your finest booksellers. But anyway,
It's also on my nightstand right now, in case anybody was wondering.
But okay, I'm going to put you on the spot. But you haven't read it yet?
No, I have not. You gotta remember, Chad, my baseball season just ended a week ago.
That's true. You've had no free time.
I do not have free time during the baseball season.
Yeah.
I've been very much looking forward to having, you know, my evenings back a little bit to, you know, watch television or read a book or three. So.
Yeah. Okay. That's a reasonable excuse. But Sparky said about Thurman Munson back in the day, the great Yankees catcher. Let's not embarrass Thurman Munson by comparing him to John Bench. And I'm not saying that Nick Senzel is going to be John Bench, as Sparky put it. But, you know, the point I'm trying to make is if you say Jonathan India is not Nick Senzel, that's not a criticism of Jonathan India. He's still a superb prospect, right?
Yes. That's more of a, wow, how good is Nick Senzel compliment.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
okay, so how close is India?
I think he's probably still two years away.
How close would he be if he was with Atlanta? Here, we're going to have this fight that you and I have occasionally.
Probably a year and a half away.
Probably about 2 months away.
I don't want to go that far.
He'd be playing for Atlanta in November somehow. I think
I haven't looked at the World Series schedule yet. Like with some rain outs or something, maybe it's possible that we could see November World Series again.
Okay, let's Nick Senzel, Hunter Green, Taylor Trammell, Tony Santillan, Jonathan India. Those are the consensus top five guys, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Who's the next best prospect in the Reds minor league system after those five guys? I'm talking about the guy that can be a contributor to the major league level at some point.
I've got Tyler Stevenson as the next guy. Yes. I'm not sure everybody's going to agree with me on that, but that's my guy.
For those of you who don't know, let me just, before you get into Tyler Stevenson, number one draft pick, catcher, injury problems. But when he's been on the field, he's been good.
Yes. And this year was the first year since his, you know, draft year that he made it through a whole season healthy.
Yeah. Still only like 20, right?
He was 21 this year.
21. That's young.
And yeah. And, you know, he had a good year in Daytona. Mm-hmm. There were some ups and downs. I mean, you're going to have that for most guys in a minor league season, major league season, whatever. But overall production was there. Got really good reports on the improvements he made behind the plate defensively this year. So that's kind of always been the thing with Stevenson is, you know, some people weren't sure he was going to stick behind the plate, though generally that was more because of his size. He's 6'4", 225. That's pretty big as a catcher.
He's athletic, probably, though, right?
He is. And yeah, that's still just kind of like the upper limit you want to see on catcher's height.
Yeah.
Just because the framing aspect, it's tougher for them to frame the lower strike, in theory at least. That's kind of what you hear anyways. But there have been guys that size before that have stuck a catcher. And everything that I've seen suggests that he can stick there too. So
interesting. Very interesting. Does he start next year at AA?
I would imagine so. The only way that I would see it not happening is if somehow he got injured and he had to rehab somewhere else to start his year later on just to kind of get in the flow of things.
So his age 22 season at AA. He's had some injury problems drafted at high school, but still he's on track. I mean,
especially for a catcher.
Yeah. Catchers
move slower in general just because they've got so much to take on. It's just very different developmentally for a catcher than anywhere else because you've got to not only worry about offense and defense, but the defense aspect is just so, there's so much more to it mm-hmm. than any other position on the field.
Why do you think that some other analysts may not agree with you on Stevenson? Is there somebody else or is it just because I don't know why. Why do you think?
I just think that some other people prefer other guys. Maybe somebody's got a Jose Siri who's got all the tools in the world. If you just watch the raw ability, you'll drool.
Yeah.
You know, guys that are more on the, you know, pure upside side of things when it comes to ranking prospects, you know, they'll take a Jose Siri over. Maybe they'll take a guy like Jeter Downs, something like that. But, it just all depends on exactly how you want to rank your guys.
Jeter Downs, what a great name.
It's not a bad one.
It's a good one, no doubt. let me ask you about my favorite guy. You don't have to talk about this guy, but I saw like 4 minor league games this year. I'm not a minor league guy, but my favorite guy that I saw this year in the minor leagues, well, there's like 2 guys, and they were both at Greenville, which is one of the Reds Rookie League affiliates in the Appalachian League. Infielder Jonathan Willems. What do you think about that guy?
I really like that guy's athleticism.
I love talking about that guy because I don't know anything, and just in a short amount of time, he really impressed me.
Yeah, I mean, he's not physically imposing. I think he's like 5'11". Mm-hmm. Now, he's not a skinny guy. He's like 5'11", you know, 190. He's a strong kid, but, I mean, he's a quick-twitch kind of guy. You know,
yeah, he'd go a long way for a little guy.
He does not walk much. That's kind of the rub on him right now. Yeah. He had a single-digit walk number this season. Now, they only play half a season, but even in a half season, he didn't walk 10 times.
He's from Curacao, I think, right?
Yes. I mean, athletically, physically, it's all there. It's just going to be, you know, can he be, you know, aggressive enough to not lose the hitting tools that he's got, but also kind of cut back on it a little bit and, you know, draw some more walks, because that is going to come into play when he starts facing more advanced pitching that can kind of exploit that aggressiveness.
Yeah, I think Billy Hamilton's the greatest player on earth, so what do I know? But I liked the guy when I saw him. Well, the other guy, it was the starting pitcher the night you and I watched the Greenville Reds play at Johnson City against the Johnson City Cardinals. Josiah Gray, drafted this year out of, a small college in New York, as I recall. That guy had a pretty good year, right?
He really did. We're going to talk about my minor league awards here in a minute, but
we are.
Josiah Gray he was in the running for pitcher of the year, and realistically, the only reason he didn't get the nod is because it was just so tough for me to give it to somebody who pitched only half of a season. But I mean, if we're just going to give it to someone based on like just their season that only they can control, he probably would have taken the award. His season was that good. I mean, there's a lot to like with Josiah Gray. I mean, he throws strikes. He throws a lot of strikes. And I know as Reds fans who have watched the last couple of years starting pitchers, that's got to be a wonderful thing to hear. But you know, I still think he's a couple years away just because he was a small school from, you know, northern New York. And this was really his first year as a pitcher full time. I mean, last year and the year before that, I think he threw a combined 30 innings. This year he threw about 150 between college and the minor leagues, which I'd be lying if I said that wasn't a little bit concerning that the Reds let him throw that many innings. But you know, it's not my job to make that call. But again, he jumped from 20 innings to 150, and that just seems like a bit much to me. But yeah, he's definitely one of the guys in that next tier of starting pitchers behind Tony Santion to kind of really keep an eye on next year. Although I still think he's probably a couple years away just because he's so new to pitching. There's still things that he's got to really figure out.
Sure, but he's certainly raised some eyebrows this year. And again, I only saw him pitch once, and I was impressed. All right, before we get into your minor league players of the year and some really interesting picks that you made this year, I want to know what your thoughts are about the big league team. The Reds are still have a shot of finishing with 94 losses for the third consecutive season. Hash brown positive momentum.
Mm. Now I'm hungry, Chad.
Do you think that the Cincinnati Reds have a chance to be in the conversation for a wild card spot next year?
If they spend $40 million on new starting pitchers in the offseason, yes.
And they're going to, right?
If they don't, then I don't think so. I just think that if they're going to make that big of a jump, they're going to need 2 legitimate, high quality starting pitchers, not guys that you can fill in and say, oh, you know, we got a Mike Leake type. You need 2 guys that could lead most rotations in baseball.
Not Matt Harvey.
Not Matt Harvey. No.
And I don't mind having Harvey as like your number 4 guy.
Correct.
But they've got to make a commitment, right, to good pitchers.
They need to make a commitment to very good pitchers. Yeah. I just don't think that good pitching is going to be enough because I don't see them going out and acquiring 4 good pitchers to add to what they've already got.
Go get Dallas Keuchel. Go trade for, you know, I don't know who.
but someone.
Someone, right. And then let's roll the dice.
I agree. I feel like if the Reds were crazy enough to let me make the call, that I'd be going hard after Dallas Keuchel, and I don't think that anybody else in the free agent class kind of really makes sense for the Reds as far as starting pitching goes.
Yeah, he throws ground balls. He makes sense for Great American Ballpark.
Yeah, and I'd be looking very hard at the trade market trying to find somebody who can be that number one or number two guy to pair with him. Yeah. And I don't think it would be cheap, and I think it would hurt to make that trade, but I also think it's a trade you almost have to make.
Yeah, I mean, and then you got Castillo, Disco, Molly for the last three, and then you've got, you know, the group of Cody Reed, Tony Santion, Robert Stevenson, Michael Lorenzen potentially. You got a group, because you're going to have injuries, you got that other group that can sort of fill in if needed. I think you have a competitive team. I really don't. They've been awful for about 100 years now, but they're really not. Again, maybe I'm being too optimistic. I don't think they're that far away. I really don't.
And I agree and disagree with that at the same time.
Well, they're far away from maybe being the World Series champs, but they're not far away from being a competitive major league organization is what I'm saying. Now tell me why you disagree.
Because I think that right now they are, but they can change that with the offseason with two moves.
Two players.
But I think that getting those two players, whoever they are, is going to be tough.
Yes, I agree.
Because I think that you're probably going to want to get somebody in free agency, and despite what, you know, Jason Linden always tells me, that Great American Ballpark isn't a problem in terms of pitching. Even if he is right, and I'm not necessarily saying he's wrong, the perception is that it is. And so it's going to be tough to get a quality starting pitcher to come here and sign for a deal that I feel that he would take somewhere else. I think the Reds would have to overpay to bring in a quality starting pitcher here via free agency when they could choose to pitch somewhere else where, at least in their mind, they're going to have better results just because of the ballpark.
Okay, you're right. I agree. Let's not sign Dallas Keuchel. Let's give those starts to Robert Stevenson. I'm going to go jump off a bridge now. Let's talk
make sure there's lots of water underneath it and it's not very high.
Okay. Let's talk about your players of the year in the minor leagues. And I want to start with your reliever of the year because this is a guy, frankly, that I know very little about. Tell me, Doug Gray, who is the RedsMinorLeagues.com reliever of the year?
I went with Ryan Hendricks, and you know he had an outstanding season.
He's a really good guitarist too, right?
Something like that.
Oh,
yes,
that might be Jimi Hendrix.
Maybe they're related. I don't know.
Maybe.
But he was one of the two closers they had in Daytona this year. He was there all year. He had a 1.76 ERA in 51 innings. Struck out 79 batters. Now he did walk. He did walk 26 in 51 innings. That's not great. It's not great. But it was really one of those tale of two halves thing. In the second half, he walked 7 batters. So
wow.
a lot of that really came in the first half. And to be fair, control has been an issue for Hendricks in his career. But he really cut the walks down in the second half. And, I mean, the numbers were just dominant. And this is a guy, I mean, he's got elite stuff. In the Florida State League, he got the award for best fastball and best breaking ball. I mean, he throws up to 100 miles an hour. He's got a very, very good slider. I mean, this stuff is unquestionable. It's a matter of can he throw enough strikes? And in the second half, he more than threw enough strikes.
Now, he's a college guy at a Texas A&M, right?
Yes.
And just an A-ball still. Is that a problem?
For relievers, I never really worry about age relative to league. Now, if you were a starting pitcher, you'd say, you know, 23 is a little bit too old for the level you're at. Let's see it somewhere else. For position guy, definitely 23 is one of those things at that level where you'd be like, okay, you need to really do something next year. But relief pitchers, they don't really work on that same kind of bell curve. So that doesn't concern me too much. Plus, with a reliever, you can move him so quickly. And, you know, if he goes double A next year and he just dominates for 2 months, with a reliever, the gap isn't as big. You could call him straight to the major leagues, and generally, if your scouts were telling you that, you know, he's got the stuff, he's throwing the strikes, you know, he can do it, it's probably going to, convert very well to the major leagues.
Right.
So.
And also, if you get 3 good years out of a reliever, you're ahead of the game. So it's not like you're dependent on a 10-year career out of this guy. So, Ryan Hendricks, congratulations, the RedsMinorLeagues.com reliever of the year. I want to move next, if you don't mind, Doug Gray. Let's go ahead and move actually right now to the starter of the year. The starter of the year. This one is one that surprised me just a little bit, but man, great season. Who's your starter of the year in the Reds organization?
Now, let me preface this by saying that the guy who won the player of the year is also a starting pitcher, thus not being eligible for this award, which he would have won.
I was going to pin you on that, so I'm glad you mentioned it, right? Yeah. So tell me, though.
So I went with Seth Varner, left-handed pitcher, went to Miami of Ohio in college.
Local guy.
He went to high school here locally, too.
And started in Daytona this year.
He made one start in Daytona this year, and then the rest of the year he spent in Double A. So he threw 125 innings, 3.30 ERA, walked just 31 guys at 102 strikeouts. He's not a big stuff guy. I actually got to see him pitch in Chattanooga earlier this summer. He did not top 87 miles per hour, but he's a guy, he knows how to pitch. He's got a good breaking ball. He's a lefty. I don't think he's going to be a starting pitcher in the major leagues, but you know, if you can get him in the bullpen, he can throw 89, 90 miles an hour with that breaking ball. He's got a chance. And I think that's going to be his future role. But, you know, right now the Reds, they needed that starter at that level, and he filled that role pretty well. I think that next year will be the year that kind of you probably see him get some looks in the bullpen because he's not young. I think he'll be 26 or 27 next year. And while we did just have that conversation about ages and relievers, you're also running out of time in terms of free agency with a guy like Seth Varner. Yeah. So, yeah, me too at this point.
So you said he's not a big stuff guy, but that he knows how to get hitters out, basically. And so to me, that sounds like Tyler Malley. And you just identified the big difference when we start talking about starting pitchers between Malley, who I think turned 23 this year, and Seth Varner. So he knows how to pitch, but he's still in Double A at that age. So, but still, you think can be an effective major league player?
I think there's a chance for it. I think he's gonna have to find more velocity than he's shown as a starter. Even if he does wind up in the bullpen, I just don't think that 87 is gonna be enough. Not in today's game.
Yeah.
But if you tell him, hey, we need you to throw one inning at a time, you can let it out a little bit more. I mean, you see that almost every time when a guy goes from starter to reliever, they find that extra velocity because they can just let it go. They know they don't need to go out and throw 85, 95, 105 pitches. So there's no conservation of energy for later in the game. You can kind of just let it all out and go, hey, I'm throwing 22 pitches today.
Well, I hope it's not the highlight of his career, but congratulations, Seth Varner, the Reds minor leagues starter of the year. Now, the next pick here, we're going to go to your position player of the year, and this one absolutely astounded me, and I don't think we've talked about it, but I yelled at you in my living room when I read this on my laptop computer.
Oh boy, I'm concerned now, but I'm fully confident in my pick, so that's okay, but yeah. I'm very curious as to why you were yelling at me through your computer.
Because you named a guy I'd never heard of.
Oh, well, you should read RedsMinorLeagues.com more often. You'd have heard about him.
Okay, I deserve that. Who's your position player of the year in the Reds minor league system?
That's a pretty good plug I just made right there.
It was.
I went with Mariel Bautista.
Now, is this a real player, or is this one of these guys? Because I've accused you in the past of making up names.
This is a real player. To be honest, he's a pretty good player, too. He's one of the guys I think took the biggest step forward in terms of his prospect value this year. He's one of these guys. He only played in half a season because he played for the Billings Mustangs this year.
Yeah, rookie league.
This is the first time I've ever handed out an award to somebody, a full season award to somebody who only played half a season. Now, part of that was because he had an outstanding season.
He did.
He hit .330 in Billings this year with a .541 slugging percentage. He stole 16 bases in 19 attempts, and he plays center field.
Power, speed. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the stats were there. The defensive positioning was there. Very valuable player. But at the same time, it was kind of a down year for the position guys overall, too. The only other guy there were two other guys I considered for this award. Ibandel Isabel, who we talked about a little bit earlier, and Brian O'Grady. And I with O'Grady, it just came down to the fact that, despite the fact that he played in full season ball, he didn't get that much playing time earlier in the year. And so he wound up with under 400 total plate appearances. So if I'm picking between two guys that didn't really play a ton this year, I'm going to go with the guy that had the better numbers and play center field.
I'm going to have to disagree with you. I think Brian O'Grady should have gotten it because in the offseason he runs a really good Irish pub.
That was a terrible, terrible joke, Chad.
Oh, easy, man. Come on.
Oh,
my jokes are also good.
You are a dad, so I guess you are allowed to have dad jokes.
That's a dad joke. Mario Bautista was signed out of the Dominican as a 17-year-old, right? And he's now 20 and really took a big step forward. I agree with you. Look at his numbers. Just, you know, really, really good. And we're talking about, you know, 233 plate appearances, which is still a not huge sample, but you're getting there.
You are. And, you know, I actually wrote an article earlier this week, and I just kind of looked at, you know, the amount of power guys hit for and their strikeout rate. And I charted everybody that had 150 at-bats or 150 plate appearances or more in the organization. And, you know, you see some of these guys, and, you know, most of the good prospects are kind of plotted all together around Nick Senzel there at that 20% strikeout rate and 200 isolated slugging percentage.
Yeah.
Mario Bautista was off in this little spot all by himself because he had a 13% strikeout rate and an isolated power of over 200. Like he's a really interesting guy in the sense that he's got a little bit of pop, but he also makes a ton of contact. That's not something you see too often.
Well, that's interesting. Give me a guy to watch the next few years. Where does he start next season?
I'm pretty sure that he'll be in Dayton next year to start the year.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to that because that means I get to see him in person more than I would if he went somewhere else.
All right. Okay, let's get, because we're running out of time here. I want to talk about, we've already talked about him a little bit, but he's fun to talk about, and I have a question for you about this guy. Who is your RedsMinorLeagues.com Player of the Year this year?
Tony Santion. Nice. And nobody else was even in the conversation for it, really. Mm-hmm. I think that clearly he was the best player in the organization this year. You know, he top prospect, he put up outstanding numbers, and he played a full season.
This is why I say he needs to be in the mix for the big league team from the get-go next year.
I mean, Chad, if you had to really just put it out there and, you know, ask me, can he get it done if they put him in the rotation from day one next year, I'd say yes. I think that he there's a good chance he could be one of the best five starting pitchers they've got in the organization right now, assuming that those five pitchers stay within or from what we've got in the organization right now, because you don't know what's going to happen in the offseason and how that changes the depth. But, yeah, I think that he could get guys out next year, and I don't think it's going to happen, particularly in the first half.
Right.
But I think that he could. I really do.
Yeah, it's a guy that should be in the mix, at least, that most people are not considering in the mix because most people don't know about him. So second-round pick and back in 15, right? He's only 21,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean he's young, but he's got real, real stuff. And like I said earlier, the walks just disappeared this year. I mean he walked 38 guys in 150 innings. I mean when you got stuff and you throw strikes.
Yeah.
I mean,
is he or is he not the next Johnny Cueto?
I'm gonna go with no. Johnny Cueto was so good.
Johnny Cueto was not that good, was he?
I mean, he kind of was. I mean, you don't really get too many guys that you can kind of put that true ace label on, but I think for a couple years there, Johnny Cueto was that guy.
Johnny Cueto, chapter 20 in the Big 50. The
Ooh,
men
I can't
moments
wait.
That made the Cincinnati Reds.
I cannot wait till I get to that chapter. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
He's got a fun story, and I agree with you. That's asking a lot to ask Santion to be Cueto. But a really exciting season for that guy, a guy that's... he's in the mix. So, all right, Doug Gray, any other thoughts about the Reds minor league system or about the major league guys? Any final thoughts?
I'll throw one little minor league thing out here for you. The Reds do not currently have a AA affiliate for next year locked up. Pensacola and the Reds did not renew their contract for 2019. Doesn't mean that it won't happen.
Right.
But there's only three teams left out there, and it seems like that Pensacola wants to take a look and see what the other organizations have to offer. So as of right now, we do not know where the Reds AA team will be.
Screw Pensacola.
I love Pensacola. The people there are very nice.
They are, yes. Okay, that'll be interesting to watch, and we'll have you on again really soon to talk about that. This is Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of RedLegNation.com. We didn't answer any questions this week, but if you have questions for the podcast, I keep meaning to mention this at the beginning of the podcast because no one's listening at this point. But you can email me at chaddotson@redlegnation.com. Any questions you've got, you can either send them to me text, or you can send me via MP3, as people have done in the past, and we will try our best to answer any questions you've got, because we're always searching for that sweet, sweet content. You can subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast. We're there. Go subscribe and talk about us. You know, leave us a review. Leave us a rating at any of those places, especially iTunes, because it does help people find us. And as I always say, if you like us, talk about us. If you don't like us, keep your mouth shut. I'm at Dotson C on Twitter. He's Doug at DougDirt24. We're at Red Leg Nation on Twitter. Also at Red Leg Radio, the podcast specific feed. And we're at RedLegNation.com every single day talking about the Cincinnati Reds every day since 2005. And you can find all of Doug's wonderful work over at RedsMinorLeagues.com all season long. And just there's no better focus on the Cincinnati Reds minor league affiliates than you get from Doug Gray. Doug, appreciate you coming in on and talking to us some more. We'll need to do it more often, buddy.
You know how to get a hold of me. I always love being on.
Yeah, always a good time. For Doug Gray and Liselberto Bonilla, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.